I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. Now that Disney and Nintendo have decided to offer free Wi-Fi, can we expect to find it throughout the land? There are two people who can only be happy with that prospect, our techsperts. Looking for a laptop but overwhelmed by all the models available? We have some suggestions to help narrow the field. Plus, Google has joined the cloud with its online storage service. We'll ask the techsperts if Google Drive is everything a techie could want. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Now, this wasn't expected. Turns out that text messaging is a surprisingly good way to get candid responses to sensitive questions. A key finding in a new study released last week discloses that little nugget, and the preliminary results of that study suggest that people are more likely to disclose sensitive information via text messages rather than voice interviews. This surprised people because many folks thought that texting would decrease the likelihood of disclosing sensitive information because it creates a record of questions and answers that others might see on your phone or up in the cloud. We'll discuss that and also what you should look for if you're shopping for a new laptop with our techsperts today. They are Dustin Jacobson, who's Chief Strategy Officer at Flat Square Technology Group. Dustin, welcome back.
Great to be here.
Good to have you. Justin Parlett is a Support Systems Administrator at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. Justin, good morning to you too.
Hello.
Nice to have you. Well, let's start with a consumer's guide, if you will, to what to look for if you're out shopping for a laptop these days. This is a very different decision than buying a standalone desktop computer, right, Justin?
Well, yeah, a lot of things have to be considered here, but I think the primary element that you need to look at when you're wanting to buy a laptop is, what am I going to do with this thing? What is my intention? And I think that's something that we often lose when we start thinking about the bells and the whistles and the stats and the figures and the latest and greatest. At the end of the day, people just, how will you interact with this device? And I think that's a very important thing. And Lifehacker put together this very interesting list of 11 things that you should look for. And what I like about this list is it actually goes down and breaks down stuff like, okay, hard drive size. Why is that important to you?
Yeah.
How much are you going to be storing on it is really the end answer there.
Well, is the deal here, Dustin, that a lot of folks these days are buying computers sort of based on other reasons, like how they look, what's the prestige value and everything else that's attached to these
things? Yes, there really is. And a lot of people don't consider, as Justin had mentioned, the real use of that, because, in some cases, you want a small screen because you want something that's very portable. Well, that's great until you try and work on a big spreadsheet and then you have to be connected to an external monitor all of a sudden. And then, that's an extra couple hundred dollars.
Yeah.
Or, on the flip side, if you have a really big laptop, like a 17-inch monitor, which is great for Excel or whatnot, it's not very portable. It's typically going to be very heavy, short battery life. And then you're not going to want to tout that back and forth to class or school or, work or whatever it may be. So those are just a few of several reasons that you'd want to consider that.
I was going to say, Justin, you see more 17-inch monitors these days. Is that the trend out there that more and more laptops are going big? Or not?
Well, actually, I think the trend is they're going smaller. There are lots of rumbles in the online communities right now talking about how 17-inch laptops are probably on life support. We see a lot of them out and about, but I see them more in the older demographics than I do with the younger demographic. And that might have something to do with people perceiving a larger screen equals me being able to see it better. And there's some truth to that. But I think really at the end of the day, when it comes to the size of the laptop, you really need to test drive this.
I was going to say, people should actually get out and use it.
Get out and use
it,
not just for the size. Feel the, you know, feel the heft of it. How heavy is this thing? I used to have a 17-inch MacBook Pro, and carrying that thing around was a nightmare. I called it my lunch tray. I had this huge backpack. The thing weighed a ton, and it was a powerhouse machine, but it was more than what I needed. When I originally got it, I thought I'd be doing more video work on it than I was. As it turns out, I do more of that on my desktop. So go test it out. Lift it. More importantly, test the keyboard and trackpad. Make sure you like it. That's something a lot of people overlook, I think, when they're buying a computer. How do the keys feel when you're typing? Mm-hmm. How does the trackpad work? Is it going to annoy you? Are you one of those typers who will frequently thumb the trackpad? So if it's a touch-sensitive trackpad and you're typing and your thumb is constantly tipping it, you're going to be moving your cursor around. So these are things to think about and try and play with it.
Yeah. Dustin, these days, how much help can consumers expect when they go to a retail store and they ask for help? Are they going to get good help, or should they really not count on it that much?
You know, honestly, it depends on where you go. There are some locations that are very specific to help with that kind of stuff. Now, you may not get the best price because obviously they have to staff for that. If you're walking into kind of a big box store, you know, you're there for price. In most cases, you kind of need to know about what you want when you go in.
Yeah.
They're not going to be able to say, oh, well, have you thought about, you know, upgrading the memory, or that only has, you know, 4 gig versus 8 gig, or those kind of things. Where if you go into more of a specialty store that's more kind of focused on that kind of thing, they'll be able to assist you in that. And think about all the accessories that you probably didn't think about when you first bought it, but then you get home, you're like, oh, I need an extra power cord, or I need, you know, an external monitor or an external hard drive for backup. So you can save on price, same thing with going online, but you're not necessarily going to get that level of kind of guided service.
Well, speaking of price, what can people expect? What are the price ranges? I know they vary widely, but 17-inch versus, you know, 13, 12-inch, what are we looking at?
They do, and a lot of that depends on the features and the manufacturer. So Apple obviously is going to be the more boutique brand. You're going to be looking at over $2,000 for a 17-inch MacBook Pro.
Man.
And that's on the low end of the MacBook Pros. You can find some cheaper 17-inch laptops in the $500 range. It really kind of depends on who made it and what you're doing with it. So if it's not a very powerful 17-inch laptop, it's primarily designed to just kind of sit at home and maybe you watch movies with it. So it's not going to be as hefty, but you can find them in that price range. If you're looking for something that's in the 13 to 16-inch range, that's, again, between $500 and $14.
Yeah. Hey, well, how do sales of laptops these days compare with tablet computer sales? I mean, we're seeing, you know, tablets are shooting through the stratosphere. What are we seeing?
Well, it's getting a lot more price competitive because laptops now, you can get a decent laptop. I bought my wife a new laptop here recently. And you can get a decent laptop from a major manufacturer, Dell or Hewlett-Packard or someone like that, you know, for around $500 that's suitable for general consumer use, with a 15-inch screen and kind of all the kind of standard stuff that you need. Now, that doesn't include things like Office, you know, and some of the software packages. But for about $500, 15-inch screen, you can get a decent laptop. Now, when you look at adding in all the accessories and all that kind of stuff, it very quickly adds up. One of the challenges in researching things online versus in store is that a lot of brands will have different model numbers in store than they do online, or
I've noticed
from one store to the next. So if you go to, say, Target versus Walmart versus, you know, Best Buy, they may have the same manufacturer kind of general machine, but the model numbers are a little bit different because they want to try and prevent that kind of what's called showreaming, which is where you'll kind of go to one store and kind of test it out and then go home and buy it online.
Well, do you guys know if we're selling more tablets or more laptops these days? Are there general numbers out there?
Well, as far as I've seen, laptops are still winning. Tablets are really still considered a companion device. They haven't replaced portable computers yet. But we'll probably see that number tip within the next couple of years.
Well, just to wrap this little segment up, is there a place to go if online, if folks want to get a checklist of things they should be thinking about before they buy a laptop?
Well, I mentioned this Lifehacker article at the top of the segment, and I really do think that that's a fantastic resource. It's a good starting point.
We'll put a link on our website, kcur.org. Just click on Up to Date Chat. That'd be a good place to go. Okay, let's move on to Google Drive. The long-awaited Google Drive is out. Dustin, what is it?
Well, so Google Drive is one of a couple different services that have been, you know, in use over the last few years. Google Drive is kind of the newest and shiniest of them. But the one that was kind of the first mover there was really Dropbox. And there was Box.net and several others. It's not exclusive to them, but they're kind of the first mainstream one, if there really is a mainstream one at this point. But it's essentially it's an online storage. And there's different tiers. There's a free version. And then there's some costs that go up for there. But for most people, the free version is probably enough to get started and test it out. But essentially what it is, there's a web-based component and there's also a desktop component, something that you can actually download to your computer to run as well. But what it does, it actually offloads the storage of documents and files and such to the cloud.
So they're not in your computer any longer. They're upstairs somewhere.
Well, they're actually both. Mm-hmm. So it sets up like a custom folder on your computer. Once you download the application, it will actually synchronize that folder to an online website. So I can actually send you a link to that file that's synchronized between my computer and the cloud. And then you can download that file at your convenience.
And so the advantage of that is what?
Well, the advantage is that if you're away from your computer or I can synchronize documents between my laptop and my iPad or my cell phone, also it allows me to share big files. So I could send you a link to, say, a video that's 2 gig. Well, I can't email that to you, so there's no really easy way to share that.
So you put it upstairs in the cloud.
Yeah, put it upstairs in the cloud. Mm-hmm. It also allows collaboration a lot easier too. So I could send you a file, you could update it, you know, and that works, but it's also a little bit challenging. So this allows a central storage for documents as well, so we could collaborate a little bit easier.
And it does cost money in some
There's
cases.
Actually a free version that I think is still 5 gigabyte, I believe.
Yeah, it's 5 gigs for the Google Drive, and that's free.
Yeah, and essentially what Google Drive and SkyDrive is Microsoft's solution to that, is they're very kind of similar yet different. You know, Dropbox works across all devices, all different kinds of computers. SkyDrive, which is Microsoft's kind of version of this, is really much better for Windows computers for a variety of reasons, kind of obvious reasons. But they've done a good job of integrating that into the system itself. And then Google is the most recent one, which is really more focused on Google Docs for the most part. You can upload other files, but for the most part, it's really meant to share documents that are already collaborating on, but make it a lot easier.
Well, one review of Google Drive called it utilitarian rather than flashy and said it had no surprises.
Yeah, I think
sounds
that's
like
a,
Google,
yeah,
it?
That's very kind of Google-ish. I mean, you can upload, you know, images and other files, but right now their focus is really on documents that you're already using, you know, on the Google platform.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, Dropbox. See, now even I'm mixing them all. SkyDrive and Skybox.
Skybox, yeah.
Whereas Dropbox, I can share whatever I want to whoever with kind of no real limitations there, whereas some of the others are more focused on specific needs.
Yeah. Well, Justin, along these lines, you were talking about these tremendously powerful new processors toiling away in the cloud, which could make it irrelevant what kind of screen you connect with, and this could usher in a new age of computing, believe it or not. What are you talking about?
Yeah, well, NVIDIA has launched a new graphics processing unit, or GPU for short, and it's called Kepler. And basically what Kepler does is it offloads some of the processing tasks to chips that are server-based. So in other words, instead of having to rely solely on the processing power of your local computer, you can offload some of that processing to a device that's based on a server, which
and
theoretically
just
will make your computer run faster.
Yeah. That has all kinds of implications
in terms of
the cost of laptops down the road, I assume.
Cost of laptops, but not only that, but it would kind of make platforms in a way almost obsolete, because if you're running processors that are server-based, then really your hardware architecture would be able to handle running different operating systems a little bit easier.
Again, server base is up in the cloud,
so they're talking They're talking about this technology leading to people being able to run, say, Windows on an iPad, which it's a little far-fetched. I don't necessarily see the licensing for that happening, but that's one of the potential applications for this.
Well, is this the future?
Oh, definitely. I think you're going to move to pretty much everything being server-based. Now, when we say the future, I mean, we're talking pretty far out, I think, still. You know, we're not talking about this happening tomorrow. But the fact that we do have a real-world application for this now, and I think it's going to be seen first most in gaming. Mm-hmm. I think that's where it's going to be most handy for things like Xboxes or PlayStations or even handheld systems like the 3DS. I think that's really where you're going to see an application for this particular technology as it in its infancy.
Is there a danger of leaving the server with too much control?
Well, always. I mean,
and a danger
we've
would
seen
be
the
what?
Terminator movies. We know what happens when Skynet gets out of control. But no, in a real world danger, though, so the server goes down, then you lose that processing power. You lose access to that ability. So just like we were talking about cloud-based computing earlier, you know, if a server that Dropbox is housing all of your information on goes down, then you could potentially lose that data. So yeah, there are dangers to it, but those dangers are going to get less as the technology improves.
So what we're saying then, Dustin, in the future is you're suggesting that instead of buying a laptop and you're worrying about how fast it moves, you're just buying a screen that will display the information you want to look at. You'll be concerned about a 13-inch screen versus a 17-inch screen,
yeah,
because everything, the speed of the computer will be offloaded to a cloud somewhere, and that will control how fast your computer works.
Yes. The biggest dependency on that right now is internet connectivity. So if you're at home over Wi-Fi, no problem. And that's kind of how much processing you can do locally versus what you're relying on in the cloud. So things like, you know, if you're doing kind of basic, you know, 1+2 kind of things, okay, that doesn't take a lot of processing power. But if you're doing very computational kind of exercises, it takes lots of processing power. You can offload that and you get back an answer. The answer is 2, right? So that doesn't take a lot, but you have to communicate out all that whole set of information to be processed and then kind of send it back. So it's kind of the there was this trend a few years ago around running these applications locally for processing things like research and SETI, yeah, and all that kind of stuff. And it's kind of now flipping back to where we were back in the terminal days of everything being mainframe, where you'd send a request off and, okay, tell me what the weather's going to be like tomorrow. Well, that's this highly, you know, involved computational exercise where you'd send it off to a mainframe. And now we're almost kind of getting back to that where because of the growth in internet connectivity, we can send that data off, have the process power be sourced by someone else, which actually gains you a lot. The biggest one being more battery life is the key takeaway there, because processing power takes a lot of energy. And if you can offload that, then you can get some of that energy back and extend your battery life.
So then in theory, 5, 7, 10 years from now, the cost of a laptop should be cheap compared to what we're seeing today, because you're going to be offloading your speed to something else. Am I seeing that right?
Potentially. But what you'll see is you actually see an increase in the display. So really you're just shifting cost. You're not really going
meaning
to –
meaning they'll give you a fancier display to keep the price point up.
Right. So now you're going to have everything in high definition. So you're going to need a much better screen and you're going to have some kind of touch interface. So instead of a keyboard, it's all going to be lasers and smoke and whatever. So it's just really shifting cost.
It's still interesting for me to hear you guys talk, because what you're saying is that you get this idea that 5, 10, 15 years from now, we'll look back at 2012 as the dark ages. So it'll be a very, very different kind of deal 15 years down the road than where we are today. Am I seeing that right, Justin?
Oh, totally. It's the way when I'm talking to someone that's even 5 years younger than me, and I mention like the age gap, it's amazing
gap.
How quickly it grows. Like just a 5-year age gap now feels more like a 20-year age gap. I mean, I have conversations with kids about programming VCRs, and they look at me like I'm a caveman. I had to program a VCR to watch cartoons on Saturday morning, and I'm a freak.
Yeah.
And it's going to be like that when we're looking, you know, back, and maybe our kids are looking back at our era and they're thinking, how did you ever survive with these laptops?
Well, so regular folks like me, how are we going to keep up with this ever-evolving world so that I can sort of stay on top of it and do what I have to do to survive?
Listen to Up to Date with the Techsperts.
I'm trying to hang on here, guys. I'm trying. If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date, and we're talking with our Techsperts, Dustin Jacobson, Justin Parlett, about the latest in technology. Your questions, always welcome here, 816-235-2888, our email address, uptodate@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page or tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. We asked this question on Twitter: what do you look for in a laptop? We received this response at KCUR Up to Date. First price, then operating system, RAM, and hard drive specs. Karina writes on Twitter, be sure to check TOS, T-O-S, when choosing a cloud drive service. What's TOS?
That's terms of service. So, for example, it's really important. One thing that makes me a little nervous about Google Drive is just like Gmail, they data mine anything that you put on a Google server. So, in other words, any email that you've sent through Gmail, that's eligible to be data mined by Google. Now, whether or not they're doing it, we don't know for certain because they're kind of vague about that. But it's in their terms of service that allow them to do this. Another thing that's important, if you're a business and you're not based in the U.S., are the servers that are storing your cloud information based in the United States? Because if they are, then they're subject to the Patriot Act and can be seized and searched. So it's interesting to look at these terms of service, and that's true for anything. No one likes to read these 30-page documents. You know, South Park had that famous joke where Steve Jobs could take you for medical experimentation in the iTunes user agreement. But, you know, it's not that extreme. But
we all read so carefully
whenever we get onto
iTunes.
Yeah. It is important to be somewhat cognizant of what you're agreeing to when you're putting your information into the cloud. So that's an excellent point from our listener that you really should be somewhat sure of who you're sharing your data with.
Not to belabor the point, Dustin, but things continue to change and evolve very, very quickly out there in cyberland, right?
Yes, and things like the government is starting to step in. So like with the terms of service is a much bigger deal in Europe than it is here in the U.S. Because in Europe, you cannot put things in the cloud in other countries. So it's country by country. It's actually against the law in some countries to do that. So there's government changes, there's technology changes, there's all kinds of different changes. And it's tough for us to keep up. I mean, even living in this space, to keep up on all the changes. So we read a lot. But what's kind of changing is now some of this information is being, I guess, kind of crowdsourced, so to speak. So the big things are going to rise to the top. And that's why you'll see, there's a company that I've worked with that's done lots of research in millennials, that the amount of TV watching has actually gone down. You know, millennials are watching 5 to 10 hours versus, 40 hours. And where they're watching it is online. So they're controlling how they're consuming information a lot different than Gen X and other generations. So the way that information is consumed is changing quite a bit, where people are relying on their friends and the crowds to tell them what's important versus just going and watching TV and CNN and other main.
And that has enormous implications here, right? You're going with the masses as opposed to things being able to sort of sneak up on people and be discovered quietly.
Right. Like, now there's almost kind of that cool factor of people discovering things. And I think, we talked about Instagram kind of coming into this before the show. And Instagram's, this photo sharing service and capturing service that, just got bought by Facebook for $1 billion. Now the concern is, okay, now you have Facebook that bought this really cool app and service. Is it not going to be cool anymore? Because now everybody's going to know about it. Now everyone's using it. And I just did a scan on my account the other day for my Facebook connections that were on Instagram. Well, it was several hundred. So it's no longer like the cool thing. So it's going to be interesting to see how that will change over time.
And you just wonder, by gosh, could the Andy Griffith Show be discovered today if it started off slowly and would people gravitate to it gradually, or would it be done very quickly?
Yeah.
You just wonder.
Well, look at programs like Community on NBC, for example.
Yeah.
Hugely popular online with the youth demographic, and yet the show struggled for renewal year after year because NBC and a lot of networks still go with kind of that old attitude of who's watching it on their television when it's actually broadcast.
Yes.
But more and more, the demographic that they're after is not consuming media that way. So shows like Community, hosts like Conan O'Brien, whose audience are the youth group, end up losing out because they're stuck in an industry that is still very old world. That's an entire show topic that I could go off on.
Isn't that audience being measured, though, somehow by Nielsen
or
somebody?
They're not valued as highly because it's not a television set.
That's amazing.
It's a computer.
Because the youth audience is so highly valued.
They've got the money to spend.
It's multi-screen as well. So it's quite a bit different because you're also, you're viewing that on your tablet, and engaging and talking to other people about the show, potentially if it's live. But even if it's not live, people are still talking about it. But there's multi-screen versus single screen, where older generations are typically just kind of focused on one thing. I'm watching TV.
Young people these days are going to be the downfall of this society. You heard it here on Up to Date. Aaron Williams writes us this on KCUR's Facebook page. I'm hearing talk about Google Drive, but no one has mentioned the benefits of SkyDrive. I'd use that instead of Google Drive, since SkyDrive allows you to edit Microsoft Word, PowerPoint, Excel documents using the web interface.
That's big. If that's primarily what you're using the cloud service for, then fantastic. You found a service that fits with you. And I think that's an important thing. Just because Google Drive is out doesn't mean everyone needs to rush and use it because it's the new shiny kid on the block. I think an important question that I have when I read about Google Drive is, okay, what are they going to bring to the table that's new? And is it going to be more beneficial than the systems that I'm already using? My household is all Apple, as we know. And so for me, it doesn't necessarily make sense to switch it because my needs for cloud computing is already being met through a combination of iCloud and Dropbox.
Yeah.
So I don't necessarily need to go to that. If you're steeped in the Microsoft ecosystem and their service is working for you, then maybe Google Drive isn't what you need.
Yeah, and one quick thing I'll add there too is that Google Drive, you know, already allows for document sharing. So you can actually already create through Google Docs documents that are compatible with Microsoft Office. So there is different ways that you can work that, and Microsoft has actually launched a, I think it's called Office 365, where you can share documents as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with our experts. We'll take your calls, 816-235-2888, our email address, uptodate@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page or tweet us at KCUR. Up to date in our second half, we'll talk about free Wi-Fi in hotels. We'll talk about the FCC wants to set aside wireless spectrum for medical devices and a whole lot more. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed yesterday's discussion with the ethics professors on conscience in the workplace, you'll find it at kcur.org. Tomorrow on the program, U.S. Representatives Emanuel Cleaver and Kevin Yoder join us here. This hour, we're talking with our tech experts, Dustin Jacobson, Justin Parlett. We're talking about all things high tech. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here, our email address, uptodate@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page or tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. Let's go to free Wi-Fi, gentlemen. There's a big push on to offer free Wi-Fi in hotels around the country. Where does that battle stand, and why isn't it free already, which I guess is the point of the whole discussion, right?
Yeah. Well, it's getting that way.
Yeah.
A lot of major change are starting to make Wi-Fi available. I was just on vacation out in California, drove back through, and the two hotels that we stayed at were both big chains, and they had free Wi-Fi for the guests.
Which made you happy, I'm sure.
Yeah, I was all right.
You were a happy guest.
Yes. I was able to update my Facebook status, and everyone knew where I was, could upload my vacation photos.
You tell people where you go and all that stuff?
No, actually, I didn't do any check-in or anything like that.
Yeah,
I don't see the point. But, you know, obviously if I post a picture of me at the Grand Canyon, they know, well, he's probably somewhere near the Grand Canyon.
He's not in the Kansas City area, at least today. Yeah.
Now, on the way out, I flew out, and I did update my location from 30,000 feet, which felt pretty darn cool. It's the first time I'd had Wi-Fi on a plane, and I felt like I was living in the future.
Yeah.
But free Wi-Fi in hotels is where we're at, back down on the ground. Yeah, a lot of chains are starting to do that. In fact, Walt Disney Resorts has just unleashed a major initiative responding to feedback from their guests. They surveyed 100,000 guests, and pretty much every single one of them, I think except two, said, we want free Wi-Fi, because they had it as a paid option. But more and more people are kind of viewing that as a right.
You pay $40 billion for a hotel room at Disney World. They don't
give
you free Wi-Fi.
Right, you have to pay extra for the Wi-Fi. It's insane. So now they're rolling that out. Nintendo is actually making Wi-Fi hotspots available to their customers all across Europe. They're going to roll that out into the U.S. eventually as well. So yeah, it's becoming something that really is just kind of everywhere, which for me is fantastic. I think for everyone it's a really cool deal. But I do have security questions about it. You know, I think a study just came out that said like 64% of 18 to 34-year-olds don't necessarily always take proper precautions when they're on a public Wi-Fi network. So, you know, you're sitting in a coffee shop and you didn't enter a password to join that network. You just, oh, there's free Wi-Fi. Bloop. I'm going to do my banking. probably not the best idea.
So when you go to a coffee shop and you use the Wi-Fi, you should log on to their system, you're saying, because there's a security mechanism built in there.
If their Wi-Fi network has a password, if it's password protected, that's kind of a very basic litmus test for what kind of activity should I be performing on this wireless network. And I think there's a real lack of knowledge being put out there for consumers, letting them know that insecure networks, which are going to start popping up all over the place, is maybe not the best place to, say, do your taxes, you know, or do your online banking or your bill paying.
Big problems ahead.
Yeah, because that information is transferred through the network unsecured.
You think it's time for free Wi-Fi at hotels too, Dustin?
Well, where I always get annoyed is the higher-end hotels, you know, where you're paying $400 a night, are the ones that charge
where
you $15.
Where you typically spend most of your nights in Kansas City, I'm sure.
Not in particular in Kansas City, but
– who am I talking to here? You used to be one of us, you know?
Well, no. I mean –
it's the 1% now.
Whenever I travel to the coast, you know, New York, you know, L.A., San Francisco, wherever – it's always the nicer hotels where you would think, hey, I'm paying more money, I should get free Wi-Fi, that they gouge you $15 a day to get internet access, $15 for 24 hours of access, which is a little bit ridiculous. But if you go down to the lobby, then you get it for free. So, you know, depending on where you are in the hotel, you have different pricing. So a lot of people are also kind of going the same path that I did, which is I enabled the hotspot feature on my cell phone. So I can use my laptop, I can use my iPad, I can use whatever devices. In fact, a lot of times when I'm on team trips or, you know, larger groups of people, we'll share my internet connectivity from my cell phone. You know, if we're in a coffee shop or working, you know, somewhere remotely that doesn't have Wi-Fi. But that's where it's getting kind of odd, is that there are places like McDonald's, you know, Barnes & Noble and others that offer free Wi-Fi, but yet higher end locations that you actually have to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
So there is kind of that concern. And then, you know, to Justin's point, there's also so many of these places anymore that people just connect without really even thinking about it, just assuming that the connectivity is secure when most times it's not.
So how long do you think it's going to be until people can expect to get free Wi-Fi everywhere they go?
I think we're getting close. I think there was a time period where cities were trying to figure that out. Like,
yes,
let's just blanket,
yes,
you know, the whole city with free Wi-Fi for everybody. But there's all kinds of regulatory challenges with that, and cost implications, and what if people are surfing on sites that are, you know, they got into the same challenges that a lot of public institutions and libraries ran into, which I'm sure, you know, Justin has to deal with, which is what's deemed appropriate for general internet surfing and what's not appropriate. So
meaning there are concerns that if you offer free Wi-Fi and people use it to look at naughty websites, then you have an issue?
Well, it's not just
a liability.
Yeah, you have a liability.
In what sense is a liability?
All right. So some person, not any of us, goes to Panera and looks up child pornography.
Oh, okay.
Is it Panera's fault that this person is there looking at that? What ramifications come down on the business for offering that service?
Mm-hmm.
So there are people that are concerned about that. And a lot of times when you go to a place like Panera and you log on to their Wi-Fi, they give you a little nice thing that says, I agree to the terms and conditions of this free service. I won't look at nasty things. And so that kind of limits some of that liability. But still, it's a concern for some businesses and some government entities as well.
Yeah. So free Wi-Fi is coming, but your point is be forewarned. Use security, use precaution before you
be a smart surfer. When you drive, you wear a seatbelt. When you're surfing the internet on a public system, take some precautions. If you're sending information into your business, they probably have a VPN network set up. Use that to transmit your information securely.
Okay. Again, our experts are our guests today, 816-235-2888. Paige from Lewisburg. Paige, good morning, and thanks for holding on.
Hi, how's it going?
Well, thank you, Paige.
Hi, I am actually a student. I go to the University of Kansas. I'm also an artist, so I'm all about the cloud. Being an artist, I use, I don't use Photoshop anymore. I use the free program GIMP, which is like Photoshop,
mm-hmm.
and I
Great
use
stuff.
A bunch of different stuff, and I load that all up on the cloud. I also use OpenOffice, which is another free program, and that's like the free version of Word, and it's probably my favorite.
Hmm. Great information. Are you familiar with OpenOffice?
Yeah, I actually have that on all my home computers because Office is, you know, several hundred dollars. Microsoft also has a version online that you can actually kind of pay as you go. So Adobe is going this path. Several of the big organizations. So instead of paying, you know, $300 for Office or $500, I'm not even sure how much it is anymore. You can either use the free version of OpenOffice, which doesn't have 100% compatibility, but it's pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Google Docs, obviously, and there's several others. But there's also programs now that are hosted in the cloud. So you can actually log on to a website and edit Microsoft Word documents and edit PowerPoint and other, you know, Adobe Photoshop kind of functionality. So the functionality is getting there, and it's pay as you go. So $6 a month, $20 a month, whatever it is, versus $200 or $300 up front.
Yeah, yeah. In some institutions, one thing we're very proud of here at UMKC is our remote labs, which allows university employees and students to remotely use the full Adobe suites, full versions of that software. And they actually just log in to a remote computer, and it's all hosted in the cloud, and they use full versions of Microsoft software, Adobe software, specialized software for particular programs.
Mm.
And that's something that we're kind of spearheading and leading in Missouri. So we're very proud of that here at UMKC.
Well, Paige, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Yeah. Let's move on to the FCC wants to set aside wireless spectrum for medical devices. What's that all about?
Okay, you walk into a hospital room. There are cables everywhere. All these devices are plugged into various things. Very easy to get tangled up and tripped over, especially if it's a daring hospital escape. So what the FCC is doing, they're wanting to clear up airwaves on the wireless spectrum to allow these devices to go wireless. So instead of having, you know, your heartbeat monitor physically connected to five other devices, they now interact with each other on a local wireless network. And they're wanting to clear up space so that we can have dedicated frequencies for those devices.
Okay. So that your cell phone or your pager doesn't, you know, interrupt your heartbeat monitor.
They don't go on the same frequency and accidentally kill you.
And the impact of this is what? Why should I care?
Well, the impact of this to me, one, is taking devices that are very cumbersome to move around and making them far more portable. So it's easier to take them from room to room when patients are getting transported. And then additionally, it's also easier, I think, to make these devices carried from, say, your ER area. You can get that hooked up pretty much right away without having to hook these devices up.
Yeah.
Well, and a lot of compatibility as well. Mm-hmm. So everything is, you know, you think about trying to connect your home stereo and you got to put this colored jack to that colored input and output, you know, whereas once everything's enabled, it doesn't matter. Everything just works, depending on what room it's in or where you move it to.
Yeah, think about how easy it is to maybe pair your Bluetooth headset with your phone. You know, it's that kind of functionality.
Yeah. I wanted to go back to how I opened the show today about text messaging. Turns out to be a surprisingly good way to get candid responses to sensitive questions, this new survey found out. It was a survey presented last week at the annual meeting of the American Association for Public Opinion Research. Were you guys surprised by this?
Not really, because text
people
messaging—
people being more honest when they text message as opposed to other ways of communicating.
Text messaging, especially for folks kind of in our demographic— It's very much like communicating over the internet. It feels a lot like instant messaging or message boards or Twitter or Facebook. And I think people are more prone to just kind of letting it all out because there's this almost level of, you know, you feel anonymous when you're doing it. And it might be easier to do that than, say, look someone in the eye and say,
mm-hmm.
dude, that shirt is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's easier to text that. So it doesn't surprise me too much that we see studies coming out saying that people are a little bit more honest in texts.
Well, and also, you know, your cell phone is probably one of your most personal devices. You know, people carry it everywhere, for better or worse, through a variety of different circumstances and reasons for use. So it's already something that you're already carrying with you all the time. It's a very kind of personalized device. And therefore, to communicate personal information, it seems more reasonable that people would do that versus, you know, your computer. It's like it sits on your desk and it's just a little bit more impersonal of a device versus a cell phone that's in your pocket.
Right. And when you have a text message, you have more time to think about what you're going to say. Sometimes in conversation, people will just spout off maybe without wanting to avoid an awkward silence. They just spout off whatever comes to the top of their head. The study specifically points out that people, when they have time to actually think about their answer, tend to be a little bit more honest with it. And you get that from text messaging.
That's interesting to me. 816-235-2888 is our phone number, our email address, UpToDate@kcur.org. Let's go to Barbara from Parkville. Barbara, welcome to the show.
Hi. Hi. I got a new laptop a few months ago, and I purchased extra for the Microsoft bundle that came with it. Well, it didn't come with it. I paid extra for that. And I assumed it had Publisher on it. Now, I don't use Publisher very often, and I just use it for fun, but I'm real used to it. And when I need it, I really need it. But I'm not willing to pay to add that on. Is there a free Publisher-like program? I did read some reviews, and I tried Serif, and it downloaded about 20 times, but I still can't find it on my computer to actually use it.
Justin?
Well, there are several free alternatives. The one you mentioned, Scribus, is kind of an open-source desktop publishing option. Page Plus is also another one that people tend to like. One that I see a lot of at the university is OpenOffice, and that actually has – we've talked about that just moments ago – a lot of the functionality that you find in Microsoft Publisher available for free on a cloud-based platform called OpenOffice.
Yeah,
there's also Office 365, where Microsoft has actually shifted some of these programs online, where you can actually pay kind of as you go. So if you just need a certain program, you know, in some cases it was as small as $6 a month that you would pay for these services. So there may be something if you don't use it that often, maybe once every, you know, 6 months, where you could just go pay $6 for a, you know, a short-term usage of the program. And then, you know, it'll be cloud-based, so it would be a little bit different interface. But there's probably a variety of alternatives to that.
I hope that helps, Barbara.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye. What's the latest? What are you thinking these days about Google and the whole push in Kansas City, Kansas to, you know, wire the entire town and wire Kansas City, Missouri and everything else? It doesn't seem to be moving very quickly. I'm just wondering, what do you make of it?
Well, they've got to do a lot of infrastructure work, so I'm not one to call out a company like Google for dragging their feet or being slow, because there's a lot
it's
that
a
has
big
to
deal.
Happen. Yeah.
A lot of work.
A lot of groundwork that has to be done, infrastructure that needs to be put in.
But it seems like when they first announced, it was this huge deal, and things were going to happen very quickly, and suddenly, what, a year later or whatever it's been, things don't seem to be moving very quickly.
Yeah, I think as Justin mentioned, I think it's complicated. I think, you know, they filed for things like what was the movie and TV, you know, permissions.
They got the ability to actually provide cable services, essentially.
Correct, yeah. So I think they're still trying to figure out exactly how it's going to be used and who's going to use it and how it's going to be implemented. I think the infrastructure is there. I think they understand, obviously, how networks work, and they have that part. There's obviously the regulatory side, which who knows how complicated that is, but I'm sure it's not easy because this kind of thing has never been done before. But it's also about trying to figure out how it's going to be used. There's been lots of brainstorming groups in Kansas City around, okay, now that we're going to get this at some point, how are we actually going to use it? How can we take full advantage of that?
I want to do a show on that sometime soon.
To our advantage, because, you know, there's not many people that can use that much bandwidth. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. you have to be doing something, you know, live stream in 3D from 27 angles, you know, those kind of things where it's like, okay, I want to see an instant replay in 3D from this camera angle. You know, there has to be some really intense uses of it because the general use, live stream, those kind of things, that already exist. So we really need to kick it up a notch. And there's not a lot of technologies out there, the infrastructure to support that.
Well, for a techie like yourself, I mean, do you want this thing? Would it change your life much, Dustin?
You know, for me personally, you know, I already have high-speed internet. You know, for me going from, you know, whatever I have right now to that speed, there's not really a whole lot more that I would do outside of maybe I would stream high definition in all three TVs at the same time, and maybe I couldn't do that before.
You know, in Hawaii, too.
In 1080p or, you know, the highest high definition kind of standard outside of, you know, Blu-ray and some of those kind of things. So not really. I don't think personally that would make that big of a difference to me as a consumer. For businesses, that's a different story. You know, if you're somebody like, you know, KU Med that wants to live stream operations to other hospitals or other doctors around the country or something like that, then yes, there's a real use for that. But they have to be able to accept that level of bandwidth on the other side. So if they're in the middle of Kansas on a satellite, you know, internet connection, it doesn't matter. You have to have a high-speed internet on the other side of the pipe as well. Otherwise, you can't really take full advantage of it.
And I think at the end of the day, between Google's leadership changes and the amount of infrastructure they've had to go, I mean, Google's undergone a major change in leadership since this project started. They've switched CEOs. So, I mean, that he's also reprioritized a lot of different things. The first thing he did when he took over was he killed 10 projects inside of Google. So, you know, who knows what's going on internally with the project. But I think Dustin raises a very interesting point. It's great that they want to do this here in Kansas City, but if no one else has the capability to receive the kind of output that we're throwing out there, then until somebody else can actually receive that, it doesn't really matter that we've got this tremendous amount of speed. If that makes sense. Yeah. I mean, it's neat. It's fantastic. And I look forward to the day they actually turn it on. But at the same time, I don't see a lot of real-world use for it.
In other words, if you're interacting on the computer with someone in Sacramento and we've got high-speed and high-speed Google and they don't, you're saying there isn't much of an advantage.
Right, just like Dustin said.
Link in the chain.
Exactly. Yeah. If we're – it's just like your home network. If you've got a computer that's capable of receiving more information than what your router can put out – then it doesn't really matter how fast your computer can get it because the delivery mechanism is too slow. Well, it's the opposite is true as well. If you're outputting more than can be brought down, it doesn't matter.
The Textberts are in the house. Dustin Jacobson, Justin Parlett, our number 816-235-2888, our email address, update@kcur.org. In 4 years, Justin, I just saw an article, most cars will work with smartphones, and that means what? I'll be driving along and looking at my dashboard trying to interact with the internet, or what does that mean?
Well, basically, all right, there's a technology on the market right now called AirPlay. It's an Apple technology that basically allows you to mirror your device onto any other device, right? Any other AirPlay-enabled device. So I've got my iPad, I tap a button, boom, my iPad screen is wirelessly on my television set.
Like magic.
Yes. Well, there's talk of this happening with our smartphones as well, in our cars. So right now you've got your big satellite navigation screen and it shows you the little blue dot on the map when you're moving around, and that's neat. And when you change your satellite radios, it shows you album artwork, and that's cool. But when you link your phone up, you don't necessarily see everything that's going on your phone. So what this technology is saying is within the next couple of years, we're going to take away a lot of that. So instead of having a separate satellite device, you're actually just going to be able to throw your cell phone screen wirelessly onto or with a dock connector. There, you know, a couple of different ways to do it. You'll be able to see your screen on your car's dashboard.
So we'll have lots more auto accidents all the time then.
Totally. Well, maybe less. Yes. Maybe less, because now instead of having to hold your cell phone up to your face when you're trying to navigate through, you know, country back roads.
Well, I was doing that in Joplin, Missouri last night
exactly.
as the President's motorcade blocked up the highway, and I was going through the back roads trying to get my way home at
exactly.
10 o'clock at night.
Looking at this little tiny screen on your cell phone.
It was amazing.
It got you there, but it's probably slightly more dangerous than if you were staring at your dashboard, which is maybe a little bit closer to your windshield. trying to figure out where the heck you were. Or, hey, maybe you pull over and then you can actually just focus on the screen.
I still managed to miss 3 deer last night in rural Joplin, just for the record. I was going back and forth between my handheld and watching the road.
Did the deer show up on the smartphone? Was there a warning?
Unfortunately not.
Deer alert. Deer alert.
I had to eyeball the thing. Yeah,
well,
absolutely.
You know, for me, I see the power being that, you know, our cell phones are already data enabled, meaning that our smartphones are already, you know, built to connect to the internet and consume content, all that kind of stuff, whereas cars just aren't quite there yet. I mean, you can get some stuff, you know, but it's very kind of limited. So I think what they're trying to really do is bring the internet connectivity of mobile devices to the autos, because now that all of a sudden you can have the best of, you know, a navigation system that's updated once maybe every 2 to 3 years. So it has old restaurants and new roads hadn't been added and that kind of stuff. With now you have, say, real-time street view from Google Maps. So it's kind of the best of both. But if you go off the grid and there's no internet, then you still kind of have that fallback plan of that, you know, old school kind of system, which is still very advantageous in a lot of situations. But what they're trying to really do is kind of merge the best of both worlds, mm-hmm. meaning that, you know, you want all that content that you already have on your smartphone and, you know, CNN updates and whatever it is. But you also want that built into your car. So you're not there kind of messing with it. You want to have the controls on your steering wheel to change the volume and, you know, change songs or whatever it is. So I think that really is, you know, kind of the future in that. But it's also really complicated because you're working with multiple, you know, I posted something about this the other day, multiple major, you know, auto dealers that all have different agendas. They're all working with different technology partners. So Microsoft and Ford are working together. What about Samsung and, you know, all these other companies? So trying to come up with an open standard. That's what my contact was really pushing. Make it an open standard that everyone can utilize.
Let's go to Mike from Kansas City, Missouri. Mike, you're on with our Textberts. Good morning.
Hey, JPAR kitten. How's it going? Glad to hear your voice today.
Oh, Mike, it's so good to hear you too.
Go ahead, Mike.
It's about if the average person is going to want to use this Google internet, high-speed internet thing. My biggest complaint with my current cable subscriber, who shall remain nameless, initials TW, is that the fact that when I come home at night, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, and I want to start streaming some video or even just my iTunes Match content, which is just music, it should be able to stream that just fine. I can't during heavy traffic times, which seem to be most of the day. That's what I'm looking forward to having the Google Internet for, is that I want that incredible bandwidth so that I don't have to suffer with my Netflix and all these things that I pay good money for every year or every month and am unable to use because my cable provider's bandwidth isn't strong enough.
Yeah, and in certain areas, a good friend of mine, Steven, is having a very similar problem with his DSL. They have old lines in the neighborhood, and so they actually can't push through the full bandwidth that they advertise. So, for example, you're paying for a certain threshold of download and upload content, and they just don't have new enough lines to push that out. So there are whole areas of the city where certain ISPs are selling a particular speed that they're not able to actually deliver.
Well, Google Fiber might change that, though,
Google
right?
Fiber would totally change that, provided that, they actually get in here and use new lines as opposed to the old lines.
Okay. Gents, we are out of time. Thanks for your time today.
Sure.
Those are our techsperts, Dustin Jacobson and Justin Parlett. You'll find details about them and more information about our show. Everything is at kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Tomorrow on the program, a bipartisan conversation with two congressmen, Emanuel Cleaver of Kansas City and Kevin Yoder of Kansas's 3rd District. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.